Thanks, Julie, for that exposition, and kind of puts us on in the role. How do we adapt, or do we need to adapt participatory breeding in societies that have highly developed seed systems or distribution systems? So that's certainly a question. Now, Fernando Castillo needed to have an appointment with the U.S. Embassy to have an interview to determine whether he was fit to come to the United States to give a talk, and they didn't have time for him until sometime next month, so he won't be here today. So I will try to give you the highlights of what he would like to have presented. He did send me slides that I have here, and I will do my best to do that. This study that was going on was one that was started with the McKnight Foundation funding in Mexico, dealing with diversity and on-farm conservation of the crops of the milpa system, which were squash, beans, and maize primarily. This is just a reminder, and Mauricio gave you a little background on it already, that diversity in maize in Mexico is amazing, you might say. And the distribution of land races is as it has been for centuries, I believe. And the uses of maize are many, and this is just an example of where the husks are used for tamales and the grain used for lots of different products. So maize is the anchor of the Mexican diets, and so it's really very important. And if you want to do participatory breeding, you put a whole bunch of bright people in a truck and take them to the field, and that's not exactly like that. But we had a conference in early 1995, about 15 years ago in Mexico, to study the idea of whether we could do in situ conservation and improvement of crops in the milpa system, which was the three crop system, plus the wild species that are growing within maize fields called kiliti. It's some 150 species of plants that are harvested and used for various food products, and some are marketed and many used at home. So the outcome was that this would be possible, and we made a proposal to the McKnight Foundation, and they supported the work for seven years. So it was a very substantially long project, but it should have been, you know, maybe twice as long to really get the results. But give you an idea of what's happening. This is a typical hybrid maize field in Mexico. As you might imagine, it's very productive and a very luscious looking crop. But this is mostly more like the maize of Mexico. A lot of small fields in mountainous areas, and we have, as I think Mauricio mentioned, there's about 6 million, about 8 million hectares of maize grown in Mexico, of which 6 million are landrace populations. The amount of improved varieties and hybrids is a relatively small portion of the maize production in Mexico. So why do these people have land races, and that's over such extensive areas? They like their land races for the uses that they make of them, and they found that the hybrids and improved types don't do very well, or maybe not even as well as their land races under the conditions in which they are growing their crops, which are in marginal production areas. A lot of work has been done on diversity in the land races in Mexico, and certainly the number of alleles. I think this is based on isozyme analysis done by the group at North Carolina State. And so the diversity is great in all of the areas where maize land races are being grown. The Mexico, Guatemala, Fernando thinks are the centers of the diversity. And the diversity is distributed within villages as number several land race types and populations within any village, and each farmer may have one or more varieties or of land races. So there's a lot of morphological similarities of a land race type, especially in the Cobb characteristics, but they may not be similar in other traits. And they're similar in their Cobb and kernel characteristics because there's heavy selection for their desired type from the piles of cobs that you'll see in a little bit. Here's an old statement by Edgar Anderson of 1946. He said, there is frequently as many major kinds of maize in one Mexican village as in the entire United States. Yet when one goes to a village in another part of Mexico, he might find quite another set of varieties. So diversity has been maintained for centuries in Mexico of their maize types. Here's an example of collections made of the Chalquino type. Primarily, and collections from different areas were studied in common garden yield performance trials, replicated trials, and then diversity analysis based on multiple trait data have shown that there's a lot of diversity within landrace types, within a single landrace type, and of course between the landrace types. So what the goal was of this work was to see if we could preserve the genetic diversity in these maize types, at the same time in maybe even enhancing diversity, but mainly to increase productivity and other traits that the farmers would like. And the idea, as I mentioned earlier today, was to provide an incentive for sustaining the use of the landrace types that they had been growing for centuries by making them actually better. Here's an example of 41 populations of Chalquino maize grown in replicated trials and in 1 year at two places. And the diversity among the local populations is quite great, as you can see in the photographs there. And this is a distribution of data from that kind of a trial. And you can see a place where hybrid is indicated, and that would be hybrid of an improved hybrid variety type. And there's quite a significant range that is related to genetic differences, as was shown by some studies by students of Fernando's. Here's the typical maize seed selection activity. The cobs from a harvest of a field are thrown in a pile, and the farmer, primarily the male farmer, does the selection. He looks at the ears and saves those that are ideal according to his perception. Now, this goes on, and the diversity in that major pile of cobs is quite great, but how much of it is environmental and how much is genetic? And that's the thing. And what has been done over the many years and hundreds of generations of this type of selection has been relatively little change in productivity. That's basically a stabilizing selection program, because by taking the biggest and the best ears, you're probably taking those from the most favorable part of the field. So you're selecting on environmental variants pretty much, and on the genetic side, it's probably pretty random. So that's sort of the situation. So how could we intervene to try to move the genetic mean of these populations? And for that work, Fernando and his colleagues then designed experiments in farmers' fields in which the field was the farmer's crop, planted by the farmer, was laid off in grids. And those of you who have studied plant breeding know about Charlie Gardner's mass selection program, where he made the grids and took the best ears from each of the grids and put those into a composite. And the farmer then selected the ears from that composite of selected ears from different parts of the field. And so we're not going to select the biggest ears from the edge of the field and put in the pot for the next seed source. So this has reduced the environmental variance on the selection process and allowed then to expose some of the genetic variants. So this has been going on for more than 10 years now, and up in the upper left-hand corner is an example of the yields of three cycles, the original and three selected cycles, with a reserve seed planted in a common yield trial. So you can see the gain in those three selection cycles was substantial. And it was, in this case, about 90 kilograms per hectare, which represents a little more than 2% gain per year in yield increase. At the same time, plant height was going down, but days to flowering remained the same. And I think that's probably important, that the flowering time is an adaptive trait that you don't really want to have a lot of genetic divergence in that to maintain the pollination of maize. But something that hadn't been thought of and expected was the reduction in ear rot as these populations were advanced. And so that reduction in ear rot perhaps represents some increase in grain yield of the ears, and that therefore increasing grain yield. I had wondered, and Major Goodman, who was an advisor on this project, wondered about whether this process was favoring prolificacy, that is, more than one ear per plant, and that might be a cause for giving you increased grain yields. I haven't seen data on that, but I have a notion that that's not so important. I think it's this ear rot thing and is probably more important. But the idea is that now the Chalkeno that's been selected is still Chalkeno. It looks just like it. The ears are selected by the farmers to represent that variety type. So what we're doing is concentrating genes for improved productivity in the variety Chalkeno without changing its type. Now, a couple of students have done some genetic variance studies on the selected population to see if there's been a decline in variance. It hasn't yet, and we don't expect it will for a while if you go back to the Illinois corn experiments, where there's still some gain there after 100 generations of selection. So, now, this is relatively telling experiment here. These are populations that had been under selection, six populations that had been under selection for several years in a replicated trial with newly collected populations, that is, the same variety collected in that same region just the year before this trial was done. So they hadn't been under selection at all. And putting those in the yield trial then gave a yield of, say, 2,700 kilos versus 3,500. I don't have any, well, there's the LSD, and I think that that's a significant difference between the two, which is another way of looking at the gain that's been achieved in the selection process by this simple mass selection program. And here's another Chalkeno type. Again, 45 versus 29 for the commercial hybrid and 27 for the newly collected population. So I think it's pretty convincing that this type of selection done by farmers on farmers' fields is an effective one, and it's been monitored by scientists who have done the appropriate comparison yield trials later on. And during this process, there were field days held and farmers met, and several of them went home and are doing this all by themselves. They got the idea and liked the method. Now, there's different ways then that you could exploit this diversity in land races, and one of which was the first case that I mentioned, that is compare populations of a land race like Chalkeno, the 41 populations grown in yield trials, take the best of those, and you get a potential gain of 15% to 20% higher yield on those types if you pick the best ones. If you do mass selection, like I explained, then you get 1% to 2% per year gain, and that's been over 7 to 10 generations now that's been sustained. And the other would be a little more difficult for the farmers, but that is to take different populations of the same land race and hybridize those, hybridize that and grow the F1 of that interpopulation hybrid as your crop, and that'll give you a heterosis effect of about 10 to 15%. So it looks like we can compare, sustain the agrobiodiversity. Maybe it's increased, we don't really know. And productivity is increased in some of the agronomic problems. For example, the ear rot may be on the decline because the farmers are selecting of the best ears from the best ears of a particular segment of a field. So they've been in that work with Dr. Castillo and his colleagues have been in different places for more than 10 years carrying out this work. And the farmers, they are the farmers, are convinced their populations have been changed. That's their perception. And they've seen the examples of the piles of maize from the trials as well. So the next step is to do more studies at the village level, and the cascade effect could be gotten. I had a little problem with that phrase, but I think that's mother-baby stuff, cascading. In other words, if you expand these populations to more farmers through this mother-baby idea or father-baby, whatever you want to take it, might be a way to get more farmers involved in the process and then providing, we hope, a greater incentive for them to maintain their land races. And some more development is needed. I think more data and work and education programs, all this could be done as part of this expansion of a participatory plant breeding process. So there's a couple of the farmers who are busy with this activity and quite happy with the process. They value their time, of course, and their labor, but they are willing to spend the time in making quadrants in their fields and harvesting the best ears, and then harvesting all the ears from a quadrant and picking the best from each quadrant, and then putting the best of the best into their pile for seed selection for the next generation. So that's the story from Fernando Castillo and his colleagues, and the McKnight Foundation supported this work, and after that was finished, the Wallace Genetic Fund provided some funding for continuing this work. We think it should be expanded and carried further, and it provides a very nice case study for genetic improvement in land races that is relevant to the farmers' desires and needs. So if you have questions about this project, I'll try to answer them, but I didn't do the work, and I'm just a reporter at this point. So. Yes,
Dr. Gatta. The yield of the selected populations, which is much higher than hybrids, any explanations why?
Well, I don't know that I can give you one explanation. I wouldn't claim it to be true, but one is that the hybrids they were testing are really not well adapted to those farmers. They are for sale, but they're not really adapted. I think that's one explanation. If others, anybody else has some other ideas about that, I'd like to hear. But that's one. The fact that the populations of the same land race, like Chalkenyo, differ so much when they're taken to a common environment was rather surprising to me. But that's they're coming from a relatively small area. But yes, let's go over here. I think he has his hand up first.
You had mentioned that you could get some heterotic gains in combining different land races. Could you expand upon that?
Well, in this case, it was simply taking populations known to farmers as Chalkenyo from different places in an area, and taking those to a common garden and hybridizing, you know, doing pair by plant by plant hybridizations to produce hybrid seed of quite a large number of crosses, so you maintain the variability of both of those populations. The farmer grows that F1 or that hybrid seed as his crop, and in the trials that showed there was heterotic advantage.
So you just have to repeat that every year.
That's right, and that's not an easy trick for farmers. I think it'd be probably impractical unless they're really, really interested. By the way, though, when we started this work, we were driving around and kind of stopped at random at a place where there was a farmer and rows of maize and so forth, and it turned out this guy was hybridizing maize. He was he had gotten some seed from somewhere and he'd made crosses, and we went and looked at it, and he was embarrassed. I really don't want to show you this. This is really bad stuff. And you know, he made crosses that he didn't like, and I won't tell you where the seed came from. But okay, yes, please.
Have there been standardized density and nitrogen during this period, and are farmers increasing their density and their use of nitrogen?
I can't answer that one. I don't know the details. Mauricio's had experience in Mexico. Maybe you know about that.
In fact, I have created a doubt because, you know, four tons suggest that they were already putting quite a bit.
I agree.
Cannot get that yield from without fertilizer.
I think you're right, because the Chalkenyo population is near Mexico City. It's a very, very good hybrid. It's, yeah, you know, real tall, but they are fertilizing, so I don't know about the change in density and so forth, but they probably don't increase the density too much because they're still really pretty tall, and lodging is a problem. So that's probably the answer. Anything else? Another one. Giles?
One possible reason why the land races are doing better than the commercial hybrid is that it is from the same. The root system is semi-sized across all the continents.
Well, that may be the answer. I wouldn't credit that to Simmet, especially because they're selling hybrids for many of the seed companies there, and that. Yeah, yeah.
We're not looking at the other half of the plant.
That's right. Yeah, you're right there.
Just a comment. I think if you remember, one of the slides I put was about the poverty mapping versus the supply side, and you see that this would be areas of very high poverty. Probably poverty, and there seems to be a very low overlap between the tribe sites of Simmet and this is not just Simmet, the Simmet Empires, and the actual in many of these sites. So clearly the correlation between the target environment and selection environment probably is low, and that is why this is different. That would be my guess.
Okay, one more and then we've got to move on. Thanks.
Hi, Calvin. The most fascinating thing out of all this, and I just got here, is I may have missed the relevant earlier talk that there were on this topic, but it seems to me that the most fascinating thing here is is what the farmers are actually selecting upon. So, I mean, so as a seasoned breeder who does some visual selection, I know it's darn tough to really be good at that. So, so are they selecting on only visually on the shucked ear harvest? Is that all they're selecting
on? No. I think the way it goes, they have their field marked out, and they will make notes during the growing season about bad plants and good plants and so forth. Then they harvest all the ears from that quadrant and basically put those in a pile. And then they pick the best of that quadrant and merge those with the other quadrants of the same field. So there is a multi-stage, a multi-trait a selection process that the farmers are going through. Yeah, but it's a lot of visual work, no question. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? We got another speaker.